The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Three reasons why I believe Joe Milton is going to be Michigan's starting quarterback in 2020. Next on Michigan Podcast.
But there's going to be one team that's going to play solely as a team. No man is more important than the team. No coach is more important than the team. The team, the team, the team.
Looks deep for Anthony Carter. Waits for it. Tim Carter.
This is no time for that. In the pocket and a sack. Tim Jameson.
Brady gets terrific.
Throws it. Get it. Touchdown. Night again.
Schultz just before Gazelle got him. And a leaping interception by Woodson.
Harbaugh back to throw over the middle. Caught by Collier at the 5 on his feet. Touchdown, Michigan.
On its way. It's good.
He's 5'7", 179 pounds, a junior at Michigan. But Jamie Morris packs a wallop, and he delivers for Bo Schembechler.
And here's your first play. Pressure coming. Second. It is Glenn Steele, number 81, who fought his way through the traffic.
Option. And Robinson calls his own number, and he's going to score. Oh, an easy touchdown for Ron Robinson and Michigan.
Winner. We're going to win the championship again because we're going to play as a team. And when we play as a team, and the old season is over, you and I know it's going to be Michigan again. Michigan.
Go Blue, and welcome to this week's edition of Michigan Podcast. I am Steve Dace. Thank you for tuning in. My partner over at WTKA in Ann Arbor, Michael Spath, will be joining us. A lot of weekend news with football, basketball, even hockey, too. So we'll do that hockey coming up a little bit later on here with this week's episode. Plus a Twitter poll question in reaction to what I ranted about at the top of last week's show with results I don't like. And I don't understand. But before we get to all of that, it's time now to turn the page to 2020. And strictly from a cost-benefit analysis, meaning this isn't my preference, not that I have anything against Joe Milton. I seem to really like him, actually, and his teammates seem to like him even more. But just looking at it analytically, with no emotion, no preferential bias, I think unless Dylan McCaffrey is decidedly better, dramatically better, Joe Milton is going to be Michigan's starting quarterback in 2020 for three reasons. But first, let me say this about Dylan McCaffrey. I love Dylan McCaffrey. I was on here early last season, 2019 is last season now, saying I think it's time to make the quarterback switch. And I think if he had not been put in the game against Wisconsin at a point that it was unwinnable, that Wisconsin was essentially just permitted to tee off every down, and they did. And the result was he took the most vicious and arguably dirtiest hit I've ever seen a Michigan quarterback take. It resulted in a concussion, several weeks of injury. If that had not happened, I think he would have been Michigan's starting quarterback this season. It really was only a few games in November that Shea Patterson looked anything at all like the quarterback we thought we were going to see all of this season. However, that event allowed Joe Milton to be elevated to the number two spot. And I think that has radically altered the paradigm of what I think we all thought and expected was going to take place heading into this coming season, even just a few months ago. All right. So I like Dylan McCaffrey. This is not a preference. I'm not choosing a side. My side is Michigan, whichever young man gives us the best chance to get back to being a championship football program again. That's the guy I'm for. Okay. This is now just looking at everything analytically. So with that disclaimer out of the way, here are those three reasons we're to take these one by one. And here is number one. Any experience advantage McCaffrey had over Milton is now gone. Well, what do you mean, Steve? Dylan McCaffrey's going into his fourth year. Joe Milton is third. Well, he's been here one extra year. But they each have been in this Josh Gattis offense for the same amount of time. You know, this isn't learning the complex pro-style offense of Jim Harbaugh with its dozens of different formations and how many different times can you run the G-trap run gap game. This isn't it. That's not that offense. It's not Jim Harbaugh's offense at all. I think they use some running game principles like the pin and pull and some of that stuff. But I think beyond that, schematically, it's Josh Gattis's show. And Dylan McCaffrey and Joe Milton have been on campus for the same amount of time to be tutored in the ways of speed and space. So I think that experience advantage McCaffrey had is gone because of that injury. That concussion elevated Milton to number two. He got all of those number two reps. Dylan McCaffrey didn't basically play another meaningful snap the rest of the season. So I don't think there is any kind of experience edge. And if you just looked at these two guys physically, you would think Milton's the guy that's been in the strength and conditioning program longer. He is the more physically developed and impressive looking athlete. Just when just looking at him in the underwear Olympics off the hoof, as the scouts like to say. So I don't think there's any experience advantage here. Yes, I know McCaffrey has played in more games, but the vast majority of that advantage came in 2018 in an entirely different offense than the one Michigan's playing in right now, which leads me to my second reason here, the transfer portal. You know, we're seeing Michigan players now graduate in 3 years. You know, we just saw Cesar Ruiz do it. We saw Donovan Peoples-Jones do it. We saw Benjamin St. Juste do it. And these guys can graduate in 3 years, hit the transfer portal like St. Juste and have 2 years of eligibility left, or go to the NFL like Cesar Ruiz and Donovan Peoples-Jones did. Well, if you look at it behind McCaffrey and Milton, you have Cade McNamara, who my colleague at Wolverine Digest, Brandon Brown, saw sitting in a pretty encased boot at the end of last season. So you have to wonder what his freshman redshirt year development looked like. And then behind them, you have Dan Villari, who I'm personally rooting for because I like the underdog that gets publicly dissed for no reason other than taking a chance on a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be the quarterback at a school like Michigan. But even if he ends up panning out as a diamond in the rough, he's going to take 2 to 3 years to develop. All right? So if Milton ups and leaves because you anointed McCaffrey, that leaves you with, right now, a rehabbing Cade McNamara, maybe, and an inexperienced project in Dan Villari. Yikes. Now, the same could be true of McCaffrey if he were to leave, too. But the difference is Milton would potentially leave with 2 years of eligibility in front of him. Zach Shaw at 24/7 Sports did the math on the transfer portal and found since it debuted in October of 2018, a college football quarterback has entered the transfer portal once every 57 hours. I mean, those numbers are incredible. And with that extra year of eligibility, provided academically he could pull off graduating in 3 years, Milton would be even more highly coveted because you'd have 2 years instead of just one. So I think the transfer portal is absolutely a factor in this race. And if it's not, then your coaches just aren't paying attention. I think the reason Oklahoma didn't go after Derek King, the Houston transfer at quarterback, is they knew if they did, Spencer Rattler, who was the number one quarterback in the country in 2019, would transfer. So the coaches absolutely have to understand and what the transfer portal causes you to have to re-recruit your own team on a perpetual basis. That leads me to the third and final factor here, and that is Dylan McCaffrey's injury history. He's thrown a total of 35 passes in a Michigan football uniform, 35. That's one game's worth, maybe a game and change. He's had two serious injuries, a broken collarbone and then a concussion. And the concussion is the real worry, because you have to look at the way the McCaffrey family reacted to that. They brought in their own specialist from Denver to look after him. Now, I don't think that has anything to do with not trusting Michigan's medical care. University of Michigan is one of the finest university hospitals on this planet. And if they didn't think that the university was going to treat him well, Dylan McCaffrey wouldn't still be here. No, I think it's because this is a family of means. You have to remember, his father, Ed, is a former Super Bowl winning Pro Bowl wide receiver. His mom, I believe, is an Olympic athlete. I mean, this is a family of renown. And they get injuries and they're self-aware about them. And they especially get concussions with how long dad played pro football. More likely what it means is that he had either a head trauma in high school and we just don't know about it, and the family wanted the same specialist that looked after him back then to look after him now. Or B, you know, this is not a young man, you know, coming up from an impoverished background, an underprivileged background. And so, you know, he's got a generation of his family that, you know, relying on him getting a college degree or better yet, making millions in the NFL. This is a family of means. And they don't need Dylan McCaffrey to play football for them, to lift them up out of their current socioeconomic condition. So they don't have to take the chances that a typical prospect would have to take with his health. They can take a more long-term, nuanced view and a more enlightened view of this if they would like, by their perspective. Now, whether it's both or neither one of those things, at the very least, if you're Michigan and a guy's thrown 35 passes and he's had two serious injuries, you got to do the math there. And especially when you consider his best asset, his best trait is his athleticism. He's one of the best athletes on the team. So, you can't really take away a guy's game and then make him your starting quarterback. You make him a starting quarterback because of a guy's game. So when you do all three, when you add up all three of these factors, I believe if Dylan McCaffrey is dramatically the better quarterback, he should and will play. But barring that, if it's close at all, when you throw in those factors, I think it ends up being Joe Milton that starts against Washington this September. As always, let us know what you think. Follow us on Twitter at Michigan Podcast. Go online to WolverineDigest.com. We have the comment section here on YouTube or your podcast page as well. When we come back, we'll find out what does Michael Spath from Wolverine Digest and WTKA and Ann Arbor think about that, and more Michigan news next. All right, back here on Michigan Podcast, we are joined again this week by our good friend, Michael Spath, over at Wolverine Digest and WTKA in Ann Arbor. Brandon Brown has one more week off, although this week he is back at work. He's actually covering Juwan Howard's press conference today, so it's good to have him back. But Michael, good to have you back with us as well. Brother, how are you?
I'm doing well, guys. I'm doing well. It was a good weekend of sports, and I'm sure we have a lot to talk about in regards to football, basketball, and maybe even hockey.
Indeed. Let's get to all three of those topics. Let's start with football. Michigan adding two assistant coaches this weekend. Bob Shoup, a two-time former Broyles Award finalist for Assistant Coach of the Year in college football. He's been a three-time Power Conference defensive coordinator, Mississippi State, Tennessee in the SEC, Penn State here in the Big Ten. Longtime ties to James Franklin, but has previously worked with Don Brown as well. Let's start with his hire. Your thoughts of bringing him in and what you think that means, his addition to the coaching staff, Michael.
I think it's Jim Harbaugh getting the best available coach he can to coach the safeties. You know, Bob Shoup has been a secondary coach for most of his career, and you know, I'm sure it was a little bit of like, hey, I need a job, and hey, look, there's a job that's available. Jim Harbaugh has done pretty well with former coordinators joining his staff and finding the right role for them. And you know, this is not a guy that's probably long for the position. I mean, if you spent you know, most of the past 15 plus years as a defensive coordinator, you don't aspire to spend a long time as a safeties coach. You know, because of his relationship with Don Brown, and it's always good to have another great mind in the defensive room. And so I think he can help Michigan, you know, and he's going to be working with, you know, in terms of at the safety position, Daxon Hill and Brad Hawkins are two returning starters for the Wolverines and a couple of young guys that they're pretty excited about. So I think this is a good fit. I don't think this is, a long-term fit, but I think for a year, for 2 years, it'll probably be a positive on the football field for Michigan.
I agree with all of that. What do you think of Brian Jean Mary, another former defensive coordinator? This was a name way out of left field on Saturday when it was announced. A lot of the scuttlebutt was a strength and conditioning assistant. Tank Wright was going to be elevated to a full-time coaching position. My understanding is he even changed his Twitter bio to make that seem like it was coming down the pike. He was out on the road recruiting, and then out of nowhere we get this press release with Brian Jean Mary's name in this position as well. He's got his extensive experience as a recruiting coordinator at the University of Texas, an assistant coach at several schools, largely following Charlie Strong as he did to South Florida, where he was his defensive coordinator as well. Shoup's not known as a recruiter, more of an Ed Warner type of coach, but Ed Warner's become a good recruiter at Michigan. But that's Shoup, it sounds to me, is it too simple to say he's the X's and O's guys and Brian Jean Mary was brought in? He's really the Chris Partridge replacement. He's really here to bang the drum out on the recruiting trail.
Well, that's certainly what it looks like. I mean, that's what his MO was at Texas and at South Florida, is that he was, you know, considered a pretty good recruiter. You know, I wrote a story for Wolverine Digest over the weekend that, you know, 24/7 Sports does lets you know like who in a recruiting cycle when a kid commits, who is the primary recruiter. And Brian G. Mary was the primary recruiter for five-star Malik Jefferson, who ended up going to Texas, and then a number of four-star players. So certainly he's had success recruiting those guys. Now, he's had success recruiting in three incredibly, you know, dominant states for recruiting, Georgia, Texas, and Florida. And so, you know, how does he come to Michigan and, you know, where does he establish himself? Does he go back to those three states? Is he as fearless as Chris Partridge was wearing the block M and saying, hey, I'm recruiting for the University of Michigan in places that I'm not supposed to be or that are generally favor the Southern schools? So I think that is yet to be determined, and I'm curious how he kind of came onto the staff. I know that, you know, Jim Harbaugh is not the most forthcoming person, and I read the press release, and they talk about how excited they are to have him. But, you know, where did this come from? Because the Bob Shoup stuff was out there last week, but you're right, it was Tank Wright. Tank Wright, the assistant strength and conditioning coach staff, was supposed to be, you know, the new position coach, and all of a sudden, you know, they lose Anthony Campanelli, and in a matter of, you know, 24 hours, everything changed. And I wondered a little bit of, if they felt like after losing Campanelli and losing Chris Partridge that they couldn't hire someone like Shoup and Tank Wright. They needed a bigger splash, and that Brian Jean Mary, with his resume, with his 21 years coaching and with his extensive track record of recruiting, that they said, like, we need to bring someone like this in, not only for the optics, but just because he has the experience of getting down on the recruiting trail and he can open up some pipelines for us.
I think you guys had a good conversation about him on your radio program today on WTKA, and Brandon added some context, which is essentially, you know, this guy is not going to come in here, no matter how good of a recruiter he was rated by 24/7 Sports. You just don't get too many guys to leave too far from their home regions. It just, the numbers bear that out, all right? But if you can get in any given class while he's here, 2 to 4 kids out of these talent-rich states in each class that you otherwise would not have gotten, that could very well be the difference between, you know, finishing 9th to 11th every year in the AP poll and actually being more of a factor on a national level, because that's the margin for error that Jim Harbaugh is dealing with right now. And with, you know, Dan Mullen, the coach at Mississippi, well, now at Florida, has a great line that the hardest thing to do in college football is go from 10 to 11, go from a 10 win program to an 11 win one. And this is the move Michigan is trying to make right now. And frankly, it's probably one assistant coach that at one position and 2 to 3 recruits in a class that could make the difference there. I mean, that's the margin for error that Michigan's dealing with right now.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. If you could bring in 2 to 3 more athletes, as you said, 2 to 3 more players per class, if you could bring in, another really talented skill position player on offense, if you could bring in a safety on defense, if you could bring in some type of project on, you know, the offensive line, that does really well. I mean, they need, yeah, Michigan is probably, in any given year, they're probably just one or two or three players away from getting over the top. Now, that all being said, they need the position that they need the most is quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know either one of these guys comes in and it makes a huge difference when it comes to the quarterback position. Those guys, the 5 stars and the 4 stars, you're not going down to Texas and you're not going down to Florida and you're not going down to Georgia and picking up, you know, the number one ranked quarterback in each of those states and saying, hey, come to Michigan.
Well, let's go to quarterback. I mentioned here at the top of the show, I did a rundown of something I wrote about a few days ago over at Wolverine Digest. 3 reasons why, unless he is dramatically the superior quarterback, as the coaches see during the offseason, unless Dylan McCaffrey is dramatically better. I gave out my 3 reasons why, barring that, I think Joe Milton's going to be the starting quarterback come the first Saturday in September at Washington. Your thoughts on that reasoning and whether you agree or disagree with it?
God, I don't really know. I don't know how they're picking quarterbacks. When you look at the first guy, Jake Rudock, came in, I think everybody kind of agreed that he was the, quote unquote, the slam dunk. They didn't really have anything coming back onto the roster, and he was a grad transfer, and this is kind of the new wave, and it made a lot of sense. And so everybody was in agreement. And the next year, Wilton Spate, the battle between Wilton Spate and John O'Korn and Brandon Peters, and he kind of just went with the guy with the most experience. And then when he went with Shea Patterson, he went with the guy with the most experience. And this year again, he went with the guy with the most experience. And so I don't know how they're picking quarterbacks. I mean, quarterback play at Michigan and the development of the quarterbacks for the last 5 years has been one of the great conundrums of this program. And so, if you're asking me, my confidence level in picking Joe Milton over, you laid out a great three-pronged attack on why this could be the case. Steve, I got to tell you, it's the one position that I have no real strong sense mm-hmm. for how they make the decisions to go with the guy that they do. We've heard a lot. I reported on some stuff on Wolverine Digest last week that was either really popular if you were someone that was never all in on Shea Patterson, or extremely unpopular if you thought that he was always, underestimated and overly criticized. But I just don't have a great feel for the way that they handle their quarterbacks. And that's kind of, again, where we are as a program, or where Michigan is a program after yeah. 5 years is, I can tell you a lot about the way that they do cornerbacks. I can tell you a lot about the way they do safeties and linebackers and defensive linemen and even offensive linemen. And running back and quarterback are the two spots that I just still don't have a great feel for what it takes to be a Michigan guy.
Let's go to basketball. And how much of what we are seeing the last couple of weeks is just as simple as Isaiah Livers is out? How much of it can be, before we get meta, and I tend to do that at Wolverine Digest even before you do. Okay. So before we get,
it's a race. It's a race
between you and I. Meta, yeah. So. Yes, it is. Usually who gets their phone or keyboard first. Okay. But before either one of us, therefore, get meta, how much of this is just as simple as the most gifted overall play and polished player in the program has been out for a month? How much of it is just that?
I think it could be when it comes to the two most recent losses, the Minnesota and Iowa. I mean, I think if you're playing at Michigan State, the way that Cassius Winston was playing on that particular day, I don't think there's anything that Isaiah Livers was going to do to change things. And then certainly, the Illinois game, you know, Michigan, that was their first Big Ten road game. I don't know if they were ready for that either. The Iowa-Minnesota game, I mean, both games came down to the final 3 minutes with Michigan either leading or, you know, tied or down just to 1 point. And in those final 3 or 4 minutes when Michigan could have, you know, made the plays that they needed to win the game, they folded. They had 4 or 5 bad possessions in a row. They gave up a bunch of points on the defensive end, and suddenly what was a tight game was now them down by 6 or 8, and they're trying to foul and get back into it. And in those two games, I wonder if you have Isaiah Livers, somebody that, you know, has shown a little bit of I can take the big shot, someone that you can work some more of the offense, spread the floor out a little bit, is a really good help post defender, a really good just help defender. Maybe he gives you that swagger, that confidence to get you over the edge. And these last two games against Iowa and Minnesota are wins. It's quite possible. I mean, if you take, you know, any team's best player, or at least their second best player off their team, like, what do they look like? I think we've had this conversation before. Michigan State, take Xavier Tillman off that team. What does that team look like? Can Cassius Winston carry it all by himself? You go through the list of team after team, and very few teams can handle that when you're talking about basketball. When you're talking about football, yeah, you lose your second best player and you've got, you know, 21 other guys. But in basketball, you lose that one guy on a team of five. You know, it really, really hurts. And they need him back. But the thing is that Juwan Howard, and I know he's talking to the media today about Isaiah Livers, you don't know when he's coming back. And they've got to find a way. They've got 5 out of their next 8 games are at home. They've got to find a way to win most of these. Because that's what Big Ten teams do. And even if you're short-staffed, you win your home games, and then you see if you can win a couple of the road games this year.
I actually came out of the Iowa game, and I'm not one. There's never. Never is a tough word. I don't think there's never a case for a moral victory. I do think you can get some confidence coming out of a loss when you find some things that you didn't have before or discover some processes or outliers that can help you moving forward. But I was actually in that area encouraged coming out of the Iowa game. You got Eli Brooks back on track. I thought they found some ways to mitigate the defensive struggles that John Teske's been having. They did some defensive rotations, but I liked the way he was active with his hands, disruptive, causing steals, turnovers, getting some deflections. We hadn't seen that really much at all this entire season. And then I liked the killer instinct. We saw that some against Minnesota down the stretch, and you really saw Franz Wagner show that that junkyard dog mentality. I think Iowa's offensive weaponry is elite, and that's with Jordan Bohannon sitting over there on the bench, who might be, if you leave him alone, the best shooter in the entire conference. But I mean, the only guy in there on their regular lineup that cannot get his own shot or make any open shot you give him happens to be the really quick point guard they have over there, Joe Toussaint, who presents problems in other areas. And you and I have lived long enough to see better Michigan teams than this one, like last year, just get hammered in Iowa City. We rarely win there in football, and especially in men's basketball. So I was actually encouraged by some of the things we saw in that game moving forward, and got me to thinking, you know what, now if this is the identity we can go forward, and then you added Isaiah Livers to that, then I think you're seeing more of the kind of team that we saw in November. But what are your thoughts?
No, I think you make a great point. I mean, look, the first 5 minutes, I tweeted out, I know it was only the first 5 minutes, but I felt like this is as good as Michigan's looked all year with the aggressiveness. They were helping on defense. It looked like Juwan Howard had made some adjustments to his defensive strategy. So I was pretty happy with it. And Eli Brooks caught fire, and that was good. And David DeJulius did some nice things, as he has been the last couple of games. You know, I think the biggest concern remains that their low post defense is just so brutishly bad. And it is one-on-one situations with John Teske, but it's also, just the help defense. It's also just, you know, whoever they put in there, Austin Davis, Brandon Johns, Colin Castleton, none of these guys are getting the job done. And so that concerns me. I know that this is a league and this is a era where the 3-point basket is far more important than the 2-point down low. But I think they're going to continue to struggle on the defensive end. Overall, yeah, there were some positives to take away from the game in Iowa City. But I really do think that they need Isaiah Livers back. If we're talking about these 8 games, 5 out of the next 8 are at home. They also get Nebraska, Northwestern on the road, and then one of them is a neutral site game with Rutgers in New York City. you know, if they don't have Isaiah Livers back for these six games, I think their ceiling is going 4-4 in those games, or at the best 5-3, because they do have to play Michigan State and Ohio State at home. If they get him back, you know, 6-2, 7-1 even is possible, and that really would really kind of spark a great potential for this team going into the postseason.
Finally, you mentioned it already, but let's talk some hockey, because as Chance the Rapper likes to say, as they say in hockey, let's do that hockey. All right, so I think a lot of us, I'm a big hockey guy, but I think a lot of us, given the way this season started, just decided, you know, Michigan, Ohio State in football is enough. I can't add hockey disappointment to this. And I frankly just, you know, forgot we had a hockey team for about a month. And now all of a sudden now, you know, they're the road warriors of Big Ten hockey. First Notre Dame, now Penn State. What's going on here? Because they did this in Mel Pearson's first season too, as I recall, right? Got off to a difficult start, then went on that incredible run and went all the way at the end of the year, and then went to the Frozen Four. So what's been the spark here?
Well, I think the biggest difference the last couple of weeks has been two things. One, they've been outstanding goalie play. Strausman had a north of a 940 save percentage against Notre Dame in a sweep, and then he had a 950 save percentage against Penn State this past weekend. And you give me a goalie who saves 95% of his chances, and I'll show you two victories most weekends. So that's been really helpful. I mean, he's played really well all year, but now he's raised his game to another level. Of course, it's not just him. It's the defense in front of him playing really well. The other thing is getting the goals. I mean, this is Michigan enter that Notre Dame weekend. I think they were, I don't know, 51st or 52nd in college hockey, averaging, 2.2 goals per game. And, you know, they're wasting all these great efforts by their sophomore goalie. And then you get out here and against Notre Dame, you know, they score three each night. Not amazing numbers, but they score six goals in the weekend, and that's an improvement. And then this past week against Penn State, I mean, 11 goals, six on the first night, five on the second night. Same argument that I just said about if you stop 95% of your chances, if you score 11 goals in two weekends, chances are you're coming home with two wins. So the combination of great goalie play and then some outstanding offense, I think eight different guys scored for the Wolverines against Penn State this weekend. There's just a lot of things clicking right now. And I'm sure we're going to talk to Mel Pearson on Wednesday, but I'm sure he's kind of a little bit of jonesing because they've got to take a weekend off and play an exhibition game this weekend. And you'd like to just keep that momentum rolling. So they get Ohio State back-to-back games, and they get Wisconsin back-to-back games at Yost Ice Arena coming up at the end of January and early February. And if they can win three out of those four games, they put themselves in a great position to be NCAA tournament bound with a strong finish, which is what no one was saying, even as recent as, you know, 3 weeks ago when they're finishing up splitting the GLI.
No doubt. I mean, even at Christmas, the idea this team was going to be in the NCAA tournament was crazy, but what a great turnaround. Yeah. Let's hope it continues. Michael, always good to have you with it. Go ahead. You can
I'll
finish
say
up.
This. Yeah. I'll say one last thing is Billy McCall, who's an assistant coach. He agreed to run the Ann Arbor Marathon, relay marathon with me on March 22nd, which is the day after the Big Ten championship in hockey. And when he agreed to it, I mean, he agreed largely because probably he didn't think there was any chance that his team was going to be in the Big Ten championship. And now, you know, I talked to him the other day, and he's like, yeah, he's like, we're going to play this by ear, play this by ear. Because, like, there's an okay chance. Like, I wouldn't say, like, a great chance yet, but there's still a chance now that they're playing the Big Ten championship, and that would be the night before running a marathon. I don't know how well that would fit into his schedule, but that's how far things have changed. That's how much things have changed in just 2 weeks.
And they've changed for the better, so that's great. Michael, always good to have you with us, man. Thanks for joining us again this week on Michigan Podcast.
Thank you.
Take care. This week's Twitter poll, we asked you, because apparently the number one reason, as I talked about last week, that Michigan can't beat the better teams in college football is they all cheat. And Michigan is observing NCAA rules and obeying them, and none of the other top programs are. So I decided, let's take it a step further. Do you think Michigan should strictly obey all NCAA rules? And nearly 60% of you said yes. Why? So you think the rules are disobeyed, they're not enforced, but you want to obey them anyway. What is that? What is that? And no, I don't. Please don't give me some moral superiority. Our head basketball coach played for the Fab Five, guys. Okay. And I love him, by the way. I've got a Fab Five book sitting right here on my desk. So, I mean, I just... Let's get to this week's question of the week, shall we? Did you know I destroyed you on Facebook, Steve? That is from something called Treel City. I've never been to Treel City, but I bet it's wondrous this time of year. Sounds like the kind of place you'd want to visit, Barney Rubble, but you wouldn't want to live there. And no, I didn't know that you destroyed me on Facebook. But the more you know, thank you. Now we all know. You too are welcome to destroy me on Facebook and then email me afterwards to let me know that you did or something. That'll do it for this week's episode of Michigan Podcast. Don't forget, you can destroy me on Facebook or merely sit back and follow me on Twitter if you're just not that aggressive. At Michigan Podcast, keep up to date with everything we think about Michigan athletics in between episodes. You can also go to the website, WolverineDigest.com. Again, that is WolverineDigest.com. We have tons of content up there each and every day. And for now, anyway, until they tell me otherwise, it's all free at WolverineDigest.com. Everybody have a great week. Don't forget Bigger 10 coming your way tomorrow right here on this exact same YouTube channel. All right, so do not miss it. Going to cover a ton of football stuff, including my very first total team talent ratings for the 2020 college football season. Now that we've gone past the NFL early entry deadline, we have our first, along with the early signing period, first real look at how rosters are shaping up for next season. We're going to break those down tomorrow right here on this YouTube page at Bigger 10. Speaking of which, like, subscribe, rate, 5-star review, whether it's YouTube or a podcast, however you access us, the more of those we get, the more it helps us to grow what we do here each week at Michigan Podcast. Thank you to all of you for tuning in. And until next week, go Blue.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.